This is Mae Brussel, and it's the second half of World Watches program number 777. And I just want to give some examples in the news that answer the question that Mr. Gorbachev is asking, who runs America? I believe it's Fritz Kramer and Daniel Graham as co-partners. Henry Kissinger is the most obvious of their agents. And then, of course, under that are a lot of other people who work for and around them, but they are the most conspicuous. There was a short item in the Washington Times a week ago, a picture of Henry Kissinger. Soviet Ambassador Yuri Dubinin chatted with Henry Kissinger and Vernon Walters at a reception for the Appeal of Conscience Foundation in New York Thursday before leaving for Iceland. This is the first time I've seen Ambassador Dubinin in the United States, said former Secretary of State Kissinger. When I met him in Geneva, he couldn't speak a word of English, and now he shows one-upmanship. He has less of an accent than I do. New York Mayor Ed Koch was at the party and told Mr. Vernon Walters, the Knight of Malta, who wants that war against Libya, who pressured our allies to join us to wipe out Muammar Gaddafi. Ed Koch said that even though he's a Democrat, he hopes Vernon Walters stays as ambassador to the United Nations. I'd like to see Ambassador Walters in a Democratic administration. That would mean he will live a long life. Isn't that funny that Vernon Walters would be one that Amir Koch seems to like enough? Killer Walters, who did the military coup in Brazil in 1964, right after Kennedy was murdered, that left them with a 21-year military dictatorship. The Liberty Lobby magazine newspaper, very controversial, owned by Willie Cardo, a very far-right wing reactionary, had an article, Silent Battles in the Corridor of Power for Control of America's Military. And I share it with you because they have some writers that are right on certain stories, not all of them, that are very important and that are in the news before the establishment media picks them up. And I'm going to cite two of their articles because you cannot afford to ignore what these newspapers say. Lyndon LaRouche's newspaper or Liberty Lobby. There are many people that prefer not to quote them. They can do what they want, but I think these are very important. This article about the control of America says America's fighting forces and the uniformed commanders are embroiled in a secret war with an implacable enemy. It is described as a silent struggle in the corridors of power, a bureaucratic battle for two warring factions. Now, this is exactly what we had at the Watergate. The warring factions and the removal of Richard Nixon and Alexander Haig as a part of the Kissinger-Kramer group taking over as head of the White House, chief of staff. There are these factions going on. And what this author said is that an Air Force general who served in the Defense Department Office of Program Analysis and Evaluation said that it is very frustrating that he had to retire, that the old-time military are being pushed out by other persons, that the office is becoming political, and that when you think of national interests, they're thinking of another nation, not the United States. And I believe this is true. I think they're thinking more of the German nation, the continuation of World War II, than anything that happened in the United States. And the quotation of this particular military official seems to fit the picture. He claims that there are dual loyalists that want to abolish the Joint Chief of Staff, which is true, replace him with a National Defense Staff, a Prussian-style general staff under a single commander whose title would be Director of National Defense Staff. And they would make policy, shape strategy, advise the president, identical to the National Security Council, but working together. Then there would be three new undersecretaries of defense and put the power into the kind of a defense department where one person, as a czar, so to speak, would be the head of that. And he says the newly created sub-cabinet post would be filled, according to the scenario, by three committed supporters of Israel. Now, he talks about Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, the man behind the Star Wars, Richard Perl, who refers to himself as the Prince of Darkness, and Noel Koch, K-O-C-H. And he describes that Koch was the person, again, trying to blame Ronald Reagan, and he can take the responsibility or the blame for the Marine death, and he says that it was botched, and he's the one who fed the newspapers the intelligence information that the U.S. Marine encampment in Beirut, Lebanon, was disregarded by the Joint Chiefs prior to a truck bomb attack, October 23, 1983. The 241 Americans were alive, and Koch is a factor with Richard Pearl and Edward Teller to cast anger towards the ordinary Pentagon officials and make them responsible for these deaths, whereas the CIA and elements of the strategy planning persons allowed these deaths to happen and covered up who killed them, and this article is about this struggle. Now, Edward Teller is on the board of Western Goals with John Singlau. The connections of the Contras and the fighting against the Sandinistas in Nicaragua and the organization Western Goals is very close. The Star Wars, Daniel Graham of Defense Intelligence Agency, who shares offices with Fritz Kramer, Kissinger's mentor, Kissinger in charge of Central America. The policies of Star Wars and the policies of Central America or any other country we invade and take over are done by a handful of people. And when Mr. Gorbachev is asking about who controls the power, Gorbachev saw Richard Pearl in Iceland. He had a pretty good idea of what Pearl is like, and I think they know, as I say, the Prince of Darkness. And Teller has been the man in charge of Ronald Reagan, as I say, since he went to Sacramento in 1966 and associated him very closely with the Lawrence Livermore Lab, and of course Edwin Meese as the right-hand man of Ronald Reagan, and coming from Alameda, was just a stone's throw away from Livermore Lab, which, as the newspapers explained this week, are the first to get the largest contracts for the Star Wars projects, and Edward Teller and Reagan were the daddy and grandfather of the Star Wars project, along with the Nazi scientists that came here from Germany, Project Paperclip, to get that first strike against the Soviet Union. So this article is The Silent Battles in the Corridors of Power for Control of America's Military, and it's an interesting article. Gregory Fosadal in the Washington Times had a story, Who is Setting the Agenda? And again, they're asking, who is running this country? Gorbachev isn't the only one asking the question. The far right, is asking the question, as are heads of state such as Gorbachev, wondering what is going on in the United States. And this article in the Washington Times says, Edward Teller, father of the hydrogen bomb, is perhaps the most prestigious defender of Ronald Reagan's Star Wars defense plan. Well, he defends it. He helped write it. And then the article goes on that Jack Kemp is the man to follow Ronald Reagan, that he is 101% behind the Star Wars, and that Edward Teller is close to people like Robert Jastrow, George Keyworth, and that they work with Mr. Kemp. And, of course, they're pushing him. He's up for election this time again, and if he wins it now, he may have a good chance of getting in the White House someday. And the activities against Nicaragua and the Contra movement have been pushed by Mr. Kemp. That's one of the things that he has been favoring all along. Another article recently that came out, a secret presidential order allows the CIA to spy on you. And I had that on a broadcast just about a month ago, Executive Order 1233. And a long article came on out about how this Executive Order 1233 was put into operations. And it's a continuation of the CIA's Domestic Operations Division that was set up by E. Howard Hunt and William Buckley Jr. And they were mentors of the CIA's dirty work. Well, Buckley set up Young Americans for Freedom in 1960 with Charles Willoughby and Mr. Wiedenbach and Ronald Reagan and Robert Morris on the board. Buckley was one of the founders of the World Anti-Communist League that is headed by death squads funded by the Vatican. He's a Knight of Malta, works with Alexander Haig and William Casey and other military Knights of Malta. And this article is talking about rounding people up and using laws that have now been activated, sneaked in, EO-12333, because when the CIA was formed, it was not supposed to be doing activities domestically spying on us. This article continues to say that the CIA's deputy director, Admiral Bobby Inman, was thrown in to breach the rights of Americans by letting this law go through, and his assignment was to assuage the rapidly growing concern of Congress over spy agencies. And then Bobby Inman set up this massive computer foundation that he just left recently, but put it together at the University of Texas that combines all the major computer companies that would be useful for rounding up people, which is what the purpose of this new law is, in times of national security, to round them up. And, of course, Edward Teller was on the board of Western Goals, as I say, which had a computer, maybe one into every police department, but one that was identified, a $100,000 computer in Los Angeles for law-abiding citizens' names to get into that computer. So when Inman went into the computer business, combining the largest companies in Texas, and then quietly left there this last week to go into another job, these computers are so large that you could combine their information and locate people and facts about them, and so the CIA operating domestically would have access also to those computers. And William Buckley and E. Howard Hunt are two of the most important characters of American history and espionage that are involved with this private law to allow the CIA to work in the United States. There was a quick article by Ellis Schwartzbart, S-C-H-W-A-R-Z-B-A-R-T. He's a United Nations correspondent for Freedom House's Freedom at Issue. He was in the Wall Street Journal last week. It said, take back the concessions before Gorbachev seizes them. And this article, again, going addressing yourself to who runs this country, Ronald Reagan made agreements with Gorbachev regarding certain military balances of weapons, and he says, take this back quickly. It wasn't Mr. Reagan's intention to say what he did, and before the papers signed, or if it was signed, he didn't mean it, and the Russians have enough of the weapons that they need. We have to crack down on what we are doing. And to talk about first strike or second strike or the ABM treaty is ridiculous, because the terms of the treaty probably wouldn't have been obeyed anyway, and they become so technical. As you read this story of the nuclear delivery, the first strike capability, and it's hard to believe, but it isn't, that I've studied for so many years the intention to make war with the Soviet Union, and then read that column from Paris today talking about the intention of making war, the inevitable war against Russia, then reading the New York Times article about first strike capability, nuclear delivery systems, ABM, and so forth, and realizing that even when the president says something to Mr. Gorbachev from the Soviet Union, the American press comes in, as well as his press secretary, and says, no, that's not what he means. And the Wall Street Journal can say in their newspapers, we'll take back that concession before he seizes it. That isn't what the president meant. It was the president who met with Mr. Gorbachev. It wasn't Mr. Elias Schwarzenbart, but he seems to think that he can take that back. Many of you might have heard on the radio and news this past week about the problem down at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. They found evidence that on at least five occasions that research had been destroyed, and they're working on the cause of AIDS and viral diseases, and the research was deliberately ruined. There was one news account that 17 people walked out of the Center for Disease Control, and there were three instances of tampering with research. And then the article goes on to say scientists said they suspected disgruntled employees were responsible for sabotage. They have urged top officials at the federal agency not to begin a criminal investigation, even though they had sabotaged research and cut off carbon dioxide to an incubator that was working to find causes of AIDS, to cure AIDS. Don't investigate the people that did it. And there was a panic down there about the fact that evidence of experimentation to cure AIDS had been destroyed at a place that is government funded to find the causes of disease and allegedly to control them. A friend from New York, a listener to World Watcher, sent me an article that was really interesting. It has to do with William Dupperman. Many of you from the East Coast know his name. He's quite a character. He's 45 years old, and for the past 20 years or more, he's been making signs in New York City, political signs that he puts at bus stops and in on vacant walls and in the subways and so forth. And his signs are printed, large ones, on the murder of John Lennon. That was a mind control job of Mark David Chapman. And he has political signs on the murder of John Kennedy, on the Pope and the Vatican. But he finally got into the people, the powers that be. He rubbed them the wrong way, because he started painting signs that said, AIDS is germ warfare by the United States government. So they followed him, and Mayor Koch said, you've got to catch him. He's worked in a laboratory for the state, a laboratory technician at Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn, and he makes these big black and white posters that are found, as I say, also in telephone booths. So he was arraigned in criminal court on charges of criminal mischief of the third degree, punishable by 15 months to 4 years in prison. And this friend sent me a picture of William Depperman. There was an article about him in the New York Times, August 21st, but the one in the Daily News dated August 20th, there's a large wall across the block, half a block. AIDS is germ warfare by the United States government. And there's a picture of a little child or somebody outside the street looking at a notice, and this huge sign is up there. Manhattan's king of political graffiti has been arrested by undercover cops. And as I say, the sentence is pretty high. If he's released, it's $2,500 bail. And the article goes on. If he's convicted as a felonious criminal, he could face up to 2.5 years in jail. And Mayor Koch was the one who said that the sanitation department should try and nail him. They've been wanting to get him for years. But putting on that AIDS was a CIA germ attack against gays was the one that caused them to go after him, and they didn't want the people to see that on the walls too much. He has his own glue that holds it. It's very hard to take off. Now, on World Watchers, going on to another important subject that I think is important, World Watchers number 769, 77, and 771, those are 3 weeks in September, September 1st, 8th, and 15th. I did part 1, 2, and 3 on the explosion in Cameroon and the fact that I believe it was linked to Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres and the President of Cameroon, Paul Biya, and that the 1,700 people dead at Cameroon was a medical experiment to see the effect of the neutron bomb on these various persons. And I cited examples of Alexander Haig when he was Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. Was working with the CIA, convincing persons in Europe to deploy an arsenal of neutron bombs from the United States. It was very controversial. The first 3 weeks, as I say, in September, I did broadcasts on that. The end of September, September 30th, an Israeli technician by the name of Mordechai Vanunu was kidnapped and taken back to Israel. Now, in that interim, from September 15th to September the 30th, there was an article that several articles that suggested that a neutron bomb was in fact dropped at Cameroon, and I cited the references for you at that time. And then there was a brief article that Israel had the neutron bomb, and it was Shimon Peres that I suspected working with the President of Cameroon on this event. So by September the 30th, this Israeli technician who worked with the atomic plant and who had revealed that Israel had the neutron bomb was kidnapped and taken back to Israel. Now, 5 days after he was kidnapped, nobody knew he had disappeared. He was taking a trip to the Riviera. He was going to Europe and then on a yacht. He was seduced allegedly by a woman who said, take time off and we'll take a trip. So the 5 days he was gone, nobody knew that he was being kidnapped at that time. They thought he was on vacation. In the London Sunday Times, October 5th, 1983, carried 3 full pages titled Revealed, the Secrets of Israel's Nuclear Arsenal. And if you go to your library and get the London Times, it's worth looking at. It's a very, very large article with pictures of the atomic plant. And it says, pictured for the first time in detail, the nuclear plant in the Negev Desert operating more than 20 years. Mordechai Vanunu exposed the Israeli neutron bomb. And it's in this article, and the London Times had, as I say, 3 full pages, not just columns or small articles, but 3 full pages on Israel's atomic bomb. The whole gist of the article really was the nuclear arsenal, and the neutron bomb was just a small aside that the world press chose to ignore. And when they quoted the London Times, most of them, except for one article I saw, left out the word neutron, even though these events in Cameroon, these mysterious events, had just happened a few weeks earlier. Now, Liberty Lobby, again, that newspaper I cited, has a lot of controversial articles and questions, such as the fighting at the top. They seem to delineate the people that are running the government as against the ones that we think are running it. October 13th, 1986, they had a story, and this is just 8 days after the London Times, scientist newsman is gone after the neutron bomb scoop. Now, that's the first time that they mention that he is missing. He's been gone 13 days. But they attributed it not to the atomic bomb scoop, but the neutron bomb scoop. And Liberty Lobby used those words as headlines, as I say, rather than scientists who opened up the Israeli atomic bomb scoop is gone. And they went on about his disappearance, and it wasn't the nuclear factory that was important here. As I say, it was the neutron bomb that they were talking about. The New York Times had an article, and it was reprinted in the San Francisco Chronicle today, puzzling report of Israeli kidnap a plant technician. That's the headline. An Israeli nuclear technician who reportedly sold secrets of Israel's nuclear bomb industry to the Sunday Times of London was secretly brought back to Israel against his will. He was kidnapped and held incommunicado. An Australian, John McKnight, an Anglican priest, befriended Banu New. And it's interesting that this article tells about the Australian who helped him, and they described how he was lured on a trip to Europe on a yacht by a female, and then the Mossad kidnapped him, and that he's back in Israel being charged with espionage or treason. And it's also interesting that the Liberty Lobby was the one who had the headline of the neutron bomb, as I say, and not the nuclear. Now, the New York Times story that just broke today about the Australian who befriended him is interesting because Rupert Murdoch owns the London Times. He also bought Fox Studio from Marvin Davis, and he's from Australia. And this Australian who was supposed to be helping Banu New got him to tell the story, and then the poor dog is seduced and taken away. Also on the board of London Times, owned by Murdoch, is U. Trevor Roper. And U. Trevor Roper is the person who made up, I say, the lies of how Adolf Hitler died in the bunker. He's a friend of associate of Francois Junot, Hitler's money man, the man behind Jacques Vergé and Klaus Barbie. U. Trevor Roper is high up in British intelligence, and he's on the board of the London Times, and he was the one who secured about $3.5 million for the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, just a few years ago, by assuring that the Hitler diaries were accurate, and by the time they were proven or allegedly not accurate, the money was in hands of the Odessa old-time Nazis to survive or to go a few more years in their style. Now, U. Trevor Roper wrote the introduction and the cover of Mark Lane's book, Rush to Judgment, the first official book that got attention on the murder of John Kennedy. Leo Savage and Thomas Buchanan also wrote books, and there were other books on the murder of John Kennedy, but Mark Lane's got the most attention. And the Oswald Assassin or Fall Guy was the first and main one, by Joe Joestn was the first one to bring up the question of assassinations. But when the legitimate researchers got into the act, like Joestn, Savage, and Buchanan, then they were totally pushed aside as if they were dirt and dust. And in comes Mark Lane with a front cover. The book was put together in London by U. Trevor Roper. Now, the years have passed since Rush to Judgment came out, and Mark Lane is the attorney for Liberty Lobby that is printing the story about the neutron bomb and the Israeli government. So there's a lineage there from Australia to the priest who allegedly was helping Banu New, who was kidnapped. Rupert Murdoch from London printing the story that sent this fellow right back to Israel to be tried for treason. And the revelations that Israel does have the neutron bomb. It would be quite scandalous if the powers that be would admit or recognize that Israel and Cameroon and the United States Defense Department could test this on 1,700 people of the third world, having the Mossad and the Israeli government working in conjunction. And I'm sure in time it won't take too long, because things don't take as long as they used to, for you to see stories of the role of testing the neutron bomb on 1,700 people or more in Cameroon. The fact that Israel has nuclear arsenals and weapons is not new. As a matter of fact, the Houston Post had a story October 5th, Israel's nuclear arsenal, the sixth largest in the world. Well, they've been making them for 20 years. That's not the secret. The horrendous part, as I say, is the neutron bomb. Now, I want to just bring up for a few moments something that deserves about 10 hours of radio time, and that has to do with the arrest of the people working for Lyndon LaRouche. And I bring it up because finally a lot of information about those characters is getting into the establishment press. He's carried these stories for the last few weeks, and the arrest is very interesting, the way they're cracking down on him. The San Francisco Chronicle and I believe the New York Times today had a story, informers crucial to the case, and they're afraid that the case will be blown against LaRouche because the people they're using. In the 1960s, Ryan Quad Emerson was an undercover FBI informer. This is one of the people against Lyndon LaRouche. He worked as a doorman at an organized crime gambling joint in Los Angeles. He jotted down heavy players' car license numbers in the restroom on toilet paper. He worked undercover for the IRS at a Florida warehouse, stacking tomato crates, taking pictures of operators of big-time prostitution rings with headquarters upstairs. Emerson, a husky man, has been a virtual career informer for the past 20 years. He said nothing prepared him for the latest foray, 18 months inside of Leesburg, Virginia, in the movement of Lyndon LaRouche. He secretly informed on LaRouche to the FBI, giving information that helped lead to the October 6th federal indictment of 10 people associated with LaRouche. Some law enforcement officials do not fully trust Emerson. They're not sure where his loyalty rests. The Secret Service has concluded that while some information is useful, other information is incorrect, and the law enforcement are admitting that he may be trying to frame LaRouche and isn't even giving the right information. Then they go into the LaRouche organization and bring up the fact of some other characters. Emerson and three other informers are the government's case against Lyndon LaRouche's squad, and they freely admit giving false intelligence and topics ranging from supposed plots against LaRouche to Middle East situations. Roy Frankenhauser, and many of you remember that name, a longtime leader of the Ku Klux Klan and other racist groups. He's 47 years old from Reading, Pennsylvania. He's been convicted in stealing stolen dynamite. He worked for LaRouche for 7 years as an intelligence expert. He told the FBI he concocted wild stories made up about the CIA to impress LaRouche. Another person working for Lyndon LaRouche that has now turned against him is Forrest Lee Fick, F-I-C-K-34, another Klansman from Reading, Pennsylvania, who made up stories for LaRouche through the years. Until last year, Fick published a magazine filled with anti-Semitic essays referring to the glories of the mystical Teutonic Rites, according to Erwin Swall, head of the Anti-Defamation League. Mordecai Levy, 26, leader of the militant Jewish organization, was expelled from the Jewish Defense League because its members believed he was uncontrollable. Levy worked with LaRouche for 4 years. He did it to gather information about LaRouche's alleged anti-Semitism. Now, a lot of people have said that LaRouche talks against the Jews as he's anti-Semitic, and I've argued, show me the article, show me the statement. I don't believe Lyndon LaRouche is anti-Semitic. I've taken his newspaper for 12 years, Executive Intelligence Review for 5 years. Show me where he's anti-Semitic. Well, Roy Frankenhauser of the Klan and Forrest Lee Fick of the Ku Klux Klan and Mordecai Levy were making up information about the alleged anti-Semitism to link anti-Semitism to Lyndon LaRouche. And the gist of this current article is that it's going to be difficult to prosecute the case. Another story in the San Francisco Examiner said agents sift LaRouche papers. They seized his papers, went through the documents, put almost 400 people to arrest and take papers from 10 people, cleaned out his house in what they referred to as a pre-dawn raid, and may stay at the home for hours or days, and took away 10 LaRouche aides on a credit card fraud. Now, you really don't have to empty a house or stay there for days, and more than 1,000 people around the nation, they claim, have been defrauded. But there's been a little bit of overkill in throwing in 400 people to sit on papers and arrest a handful, and four of them are federal agents that are working with the federal government. I don't have time. The time is running out. I want to do more on the very controversial LaRouche, and I want to do more on the Syrian, before I get into the Nicaraguan airplane crash, next week on the Syrian expulsion of the members of, not the Syrian, the Great British expulsion of the Syrian members from their government, the ambassador breaking relations with Syria, and the implications, again, of the Mossad and Israel in instigating, through provocations, a situation in the Middle East to serve Great Britain and the Mossad at the expense of peace in the Middle East. It's a very big story, but the time goes too quickly, and I've touched a lot of bases. I'll do more on LaRouche. He deserves a lot more hours. As I say, you can barely touch it in the Syrian situation, but the time flies, and you lose track of how much you want to say. As I said at the beginning of the hour, you can't do justice to all of the news. There's no way, but there are certain articles I didn't want to share with you this week, and I'll continue with them next week, and I know there'll be a lot more to add to that. Unfortunately, I wish things would slow down a little, but they don't. In the meantime, this is Mae Bressel, and thanks again for the books and articles, and we'll continue with some of these stories when we pick up the pieces beginning next week.